At Her Spirit, we're here for you. We want to help you discover your potential, achieve your goals, ignite your fitness, find your community. Head to herspirit.co.uk and sign up for our core membership. Get access to our virtual classes, monthly challenges, expert advice, and track your progress in our health hub. You'll also find your very own cheerleading squad who will support you every step of the way. Use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 and get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
Hi, everyone. This is the Her Spirit podcast with me, Annie Emerson, and my gorgeous, lovely friend, Louise Minchin. We're here to hopefully bring you lots of laughs and fun and all things about what, Lou? You say more.
It's about sport. It's about exercise. It's about how to keep ourselves happy. And I'm saying all of this because I'm aware that our next guest, who I have known for many years, I don't think she's had a chance to listen to podcasts, but that's totally fine. Julia Bradbury, amazing person, television presenter. You have brought walking to the nation. Good on you.
Oh, hello, everybody. Hello, Lou. Hello, Annie. It's so nice to talk to you. I have to say I'm a little perplexed as to why you have me on this podcast, because obviously the walking thing, but the sporty thing and everything. I mean, I literally wouldn't tie up my trainers next to you, Annie, because I would be embarrassed to do so.
No, Julia, don't say that. Louise has already told me that you girls go way back, so I know a little bit more about you than you do about me. But I guess I'm probably, there's two sides to me, isn't there, Lou? Probably there's the very sporty side and there's also the quite nutty fun side that definitely likes one too many glasses of wine.
I would say there's Julia, she has a sporty side and a naughty side, and I know that you two would get on extremely well.
We need
on
to
the naughty
meet outside
side.
The podcast environment. We need to do something other than podding, I think, is where we're heading with this.
We can do plodding.
We can do plodding. Yes, plodding. Picking up plastic as we run and jog as well.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So actually, in fact,
I was thinking something even more fun than that, but hey, let's start there.
Annie and I are planning a plod, aren't we? We're going to go and do the Three Peaks this year. Have you done it, Julia? You must have done it.
I haven't done the Three Peaks, but I've done those peaks individually with various walks. And in fact, Penny Ghent, which is one of those Three Peaks in Yorkshire, is a real favourite. And that was repeated recently on ITV. The thing about my walks is people think that I walk every single day of my life, because the walks do tend to be on television quite a lot, because they repeat them, because people just keep watching them, which is wonderful in one way from a sort of a TV profile point of view, Lou, which, you know, you and I care about a little bit, or it's important-ish, this sort of visibility. That is the good thing about the walks. But as you said right at the very beginning, the thing I'm most proud about is when I get the texts and the messages and the emails from people saying, you made me start walking, or I go walking with my friend or my partner because of you. And that is the lovely stuff. That's the bit that makes you sort of go warm and fuzzy. But Penny Ghent is a lovely, lovely walk, and you probably won't like it, because I don't know if you do it last or first on the Three Peaks Challenge, but it doesn't matter.
So that's Scarfell, is it?
No, that's Penny Ghent that I'm talking about.
Penny Ghent.
Penny Ghent's Yorkshire. So there's a Three Peaks Challenge in Yorkshire, and Penny Ghent is one of them.
Oh no, we're doing Snowdonia, Scarfell, and I'm doing the right break. We're starting in Scotland and then Scarfell and then Snowdonia.
So Ben, you can come with us, Julia.
Come on, want you to join in.
It. Well done, you. Why it's great. I'll share my experience of the Three Peaks of the Scarfell bit of the Three Peaks. I summited Scarfell for one of my walks, and it was beautiful, beautiful pinky sky. The views weren't great, but the skyline was wonderful. And as we were going down, and people often comment about this on the series, we went down as night was falling, which was, we completely misjudged it from a filming point of view, breaking all health and safety rules. And we were going down in the dark. And as we were heading down with our head torches on, which is how we did get down, everybody always says, oh, you get a helicopter down. No, we don't. It's a BBC Four budget helicopter, my schmelly. As we were walking down, all of the Three Peak Challenge people were coming up Scarfell carrying bikes. Idiots.
Oh, gosh. We're not doing bikes as well at this point, are we, Annie?
definitely no bites, just legs, leggies. That's all we're after. Yeah.
Sorry, I don't mean to be rude calling you idiots. Just so that kind of extremeness. I can't do that.
Julia, I'm not offended by being called an idiot. I like to prove people wrong. And Louise and I, we're going to prove you wrong. And you're going to wish you'd come with us too.
Well, honestly, I already do wish that I was coming with you too, particularly. But let's talk about it again afterwards, shall we, and see how those feet are doing and how the legs are feeling and how many blisters you've got. Are you going to run or walk it?
Well, do you know, that's a very good question. So I think, first of all, I think we start at like 8 o'clock in the morning, don't we, doing Ben Nevis, Annie, and then carry on. So it's going to take hopefully less than 24 hours. And that's a very good question about the running and the walking, because I've started training Annie for this, and I've been doing some walking. And my gosh, Julia, I mean, I do a lot of running. Walking's really tiring, isn't it? And she got a knowing look on her face.
Walking is a fantastic exercise, and people really underestimate it, but it is the most accessible form of exercise for most people. So we're talking about people who, you know, we can talk separately about people who have mobility issues and things. But for people who are perhaps frightened about getting into some sort of exercise regime of any kind, and people who don't like the gym and they don't like the idea of doing dance classes or yoga or anything like that, walking is one of the best things that you can do, because there are no barriers. You get yourself a decent pair of walking shoes or walking boots, and that's it. You don't need to live somewhere particularly outstanding and beautiful. You can walk around your local canals, you can get to your park, you can set yourself goals, and you can really, really build up your fitness to a very acceptable level just through walking. One of the best stories that I had from somebody, he wrote to me, and he'd watched one of the walks, and he said he was very overweight and not very well. And after watching one of the walks, he set himself a goal. There was a little hill outside his kitchen window, and he set himself the task of getting to the top of that hill and back. And over the course of the year, he did manage to do that, and he did manage to get back and forth up and down the hill. He didn't even tell me. It wasn't massive. It was maybe, you know, a couple of miles or something. And over the course of the year, he lost an enormous amount of weight. He went back to see his GP, and his GP apparently stood up and shook his hand and said, "Congratulations, you've saved your life."
Wow.
And that was just because he'd started doing something small. And I think for people who are scared about exercise, there's always this feeling that you have to commit an enormous amount of time to it, that you have to be very good at a particular thing in order to be, you know, achieve a certain level of fitness. And actually you don't. You have to make sure that you give yourself, even if it's 10 minutes a day to start with, you go, this is what I'm going to do. That 10 minutes is so valuable in terms of your mental health, that you've put yourself in that position to start doing this task for yourself. And then you grow and you build that. And research has proven that you can do, if you walk 3 or 4 times a week, 30 minutes a week, get your heart rate up, so you're a little bit clammy, you're a little bit hot, you know, you can feel the impact on your body. That is doing you the world of good.
You asked why you were invited on this podcast. That is exactly why you were invited on this podcast, because, you know, the whole podcast, I think this is episode 18, Annie and I have been talking about lots of things, but it is essentially about the magic power of exercise on both your body and your mind. And you're right, the last podcast, we were speaking to the psychologist Claudia Hammond about that 10 minutes walking. Incredibly good for you, and good for you in so many different ways.
Yes, and it's and I think that is a lot of people's big stumbling block, is they think, well, I haven't got enough time, so then they don't do anything. And we're all busy, and, you know, and let's forget lockdown at this moment, because our lives have been disrupted in very different ways. But ordinarily, we are all, and even now, I mean, for me, I'm really busy. I've got 3 kids, homeschooling, I've got work projects, writing a book, doing all sorts of stuff. It's hard to carve out that time for yourself, but it is so important. I mean, I do a series of sessions with a psychotherapist called Jonathan Hoban, which we've been doing for people during lockdown just to help them with their mental health. And we put that out on my website, The Outdoor Guide. And it's just him and I chatting for half an hour every week about things that we think will have an impact on people and mental health issues that they might be coming across during lockdown. And we revert again and again to self-care. And that the importance of taking that time for yourself, the 10 minutes, the half an hour every day, because if you don't do that for yourself, then you can't look after anybody else. you can't look after your children, you can't take care of, you know, your friends who might need your help. It's so important. And part of that for me very much is the exercise that I build into my day, which is walking. I either walk, I walk, or I do yoga, or I'll do a high intensity, sort of one of those YouTube crazy, some loud American lady shouting at me, telling me to do something 50 more times. And I find her voice really annoying. So I just put the music up louder, but I carry on doing.
And they say, you got this.
You got this. Okay, one more time. High five yourself. Oh, anyway, turn her down, turn the music up, and just copy the exercises.
I tell you what, on the Her Spirit app, we're much more gentle than that.
Yes. I mean, I sometimes you're in the mood for something a bit more high impact. And sometimes I'm not in the mood to exercise at all. And that is when the walking goes, okay, I'm just going to go for a walk. I'm going to go to the park. I'm going to walk around, you know, do some circuits of the garden. And I'm just going to sniff in different microbes, you know, smelling different things, getting into a different environment. If you can get to green spaces, that's incredibly good for you, because the microbes are all the little things that the tiny fungi and the plants produce, and they emit these different chemicals and these microbes that are really good for us to inhale as humans, because that builds your immune system, and it's a change of environment, and it raises your oxytocin levels. So you can actually stand next to certain trees that emit certain sort of hormones, and they make you feel happy. So it really is, for me, it's the green space combined with the walking. That combination of things is incredibly good for us.
At Her Spirit, we know how powerful women can be. We love your strength, your determination, your compassion. We love the energy that sparks when we connect and spur each other on. Her Spirit was created to ignite that flame of determination, to unleash your energy, to build your self-belief, and to help every woman find a way to your healthiest mind, body, and soul yet. We want to inspire 1 million women just like you to be active, healthy, and happy, because you deserve it. Head to herspirit.co.uk, join our core membership, and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. Join our monthly challenges, get access to the Her Spirit Health Hub, and track your activity levels, mood, food, sleep, and stress every single week with your own personalised dashboard. Get expert advice and join daily live classes that can be played back at any time. Plus, find the support that you need to get started and stay motivated. Just sign up at herspirit.co.uk and use the code HERSPIRITPOD3 to get 3 months completely free. It's time for you.
I want to go outside now. I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to leave this podcast. I mean, the way you've just sold it, Julia, honestly. But you've got absolutely got a point. And I think, you know, what I don't, and what we none of us want to do, is say to people, you've got to do this. It's the fact that the three of us know the benefit. And I think for women, you know, it's been particularly difficult this time. You know, you've mentioned you've got three small children, but you must prioritize, because, you know, for long-term health, physical and mental, you know, you will be a better person, a better mum, if you fit in the, you know, it's almost like you've got to schedule it into your day, right? You've got to say, this time, this is what I'm doing. I don't care what anyone else says, and however that exercise looks, you know, it just for your benefit.
Yeah, one of the most important things during lockdown, from a psychological point of view, and this goes back to what Jonathan Hoban and I have been talking about, is setting up that routine is very important. If you've got kids, then you'll know how important it is for them to have a routine. It makes the day go faster. They do need structure. It works for them. And if you're trying to fit work around your work around that as well, then if they know that the morning is schoolwork and you've got the different things laid out. But it is important for us as well. And actually, it's important always. And as you said, Annie, it's so important to schedule it in this time for you and not to feel guilty about it. And if you've got a partner, then to get your partner to say, look, I'm going to go and do a walk for half an hour. I need you to cover. Or actually, I'm physically exhausted. I need a lie-in. I need you to do this for me. I need to have a lie-in this morning. Can you do the kids in the morning? To be able to ask for that and do that for yourself and not feel guilty about it is incredibly important. And if you're alone and you're struggling, it's also important. You can still schedule that in for you, because I think if you're on your own, the time just can sort of wander, can't it? And you can drift, and then you spend a bit of time on social media, and then you do the housework, or then you get into work. I mean, the other important thing with work and screens is you should stand up every 20 minutes, and you should just walk around and do something else, just to get away from the screen time and refresh yourself. And studies have shown that in work environments where you take regular breaks, you are more effective, you're more efficient, and your work will get more out of you if you do that. So we need to lose the guilt.
The mums. Yeah.
We're on this planet for such a short period of time. Let's make the most of it and make it as happy as we possibly can.
There was something out a couple of weeks ago in one of the newspapers, you know, one of the endless surveys talking about people, you know, what they were really had liked about lockdown and would like to take into the future. And one of them was exactly that, spending more time with your children, having meals together. You know, there's so much that we've not been forced into doing, but we've done because we can and we sort of have to, that actually there are things certainly that I've learned that hopefully will take forward into the new era post-COVID, whenever that is actually the case.
Yeah, and something else that everybody has embraced, which you will have heard and has probably come up in some of your chats as well, is nature. People are hearing the birds because the noise pollution has gone down. And it's not just the noise pollution, the particulate pollution has gone down as well because of the decrease of the traffic. So people are feeling healthier. They're seeing the skies. We've had a robin nesting in our garden, and the kids have been enthralled, and we had a bit of a tragedy, but you know, the chick didn't make it. But
again,
you know, the children were involved in this drama, and they're learning about the life cycle and nature, and it's important. And lots of people have keyed onto that again. And actually my sort of big thing, the thing that I'm passionate about, is trying to keep that connection with nature. Because in a generation, we have lost people who don't know how to grow food. And I don't mean we all have to be farmers, but actually growing something, a tomato plant, a herb, a sunflower, people who don't understand where their food comes from at all. It just literally is from a supermarket, as far as some people are concerned. There is no thought process about the growing and the people that are growing and the process of that. And that disconnection on that level really means that you're disconnected from the only thing that is a constant, and that is nature. Nature is the constant in all of our lives. That is where we have come from. That is how we have evolved. And not to have any connection and any contact with nature on a daily basis, you are really impacting yourself. You are the one that is suffering, because it is good for you. The University of Exeter is brilliant at this stuff, and they do a lot of research every year, year on year, about nature and the impact on human beings. And last year they did a study with 20,000 people, so a significant study. And of those 20,000 people, the half that spent just 120 minutes in nature a week, so that's 2 hours a week, and it didn't matter whether that was in one hit or whether it was spread out over the week, those people were happier mentally, physically, and physiologically. There was a marked improvement of the overall health of those people. And it didn't matter how old they were, what ethnicity they were, what social bracket they fell under. It crossed all of those borders, and it just made that group of people happier and healthier. And that is what we all need to do. And that's why we need to look after our parks. That's why people need to care about their parks. That's why parks in cities are important. And that's why our countryside is so important.
I think this is, you know, an incredibly powerful message. I mean, it's making me want to run to the garden centre right now. But that aside, to start planting. We've got a little pot of carrots growing outside and peppers. That's a start, right?
That's good. That is it. That is the beginning. And it doesn't, as I said, it's not about all becoming farmers, but if you don't know about those things, if you don't know about nature, how can you care about the planet? How do you care? I mean, we live in central London. My kids walk to school every day, and I'm the only one in the family that is obsessed about them walking through the back route, so that they're not walking along the most polluted main road highway. And all the rest of the family laugh at me about that. And I, obviously, my walk to school takes 5 minutes longer because I'm dodging through the back roads. But now now everyone in the family goes, oh, I get it, because now we can feel the difference. And only today, as we talk, a study has come out in Mexico City where the pollution levels are through the roof, and they have discovered that those particulates from traffic pollution get into the lungs of children, and they have a long-term impact on children's effect. So these kinds of studies, they're in the brain, they've discovered them in the brain. There's a talk about connection between Alzheimer's and pollution. These things are real, and they are affecting us and our everyday health. And if we're going to live in cities, then we need to green them up, and we need to care about them more. We need to have green roofs, we need to have more trees, we need to have more parks, and people need to care about that. And the only way they can care about it is to connect with it. Louise is just laughing at me.
No, not at all. No, because you had your face turned away as my daughter just walked straight through the shot. I wasn't laughing at you at all. You missed her, Julia. Annie saw her, didn't you, Annie? Mia, no. Who's now 19.
19?
Yes, Julia, 19.
How did that happen?
I know, exactly. Anyway, you were talking about really serious things. And I know that you have for ages been very, very passionate, hadn't you, about plastic, about the environment, about our massive impact that we have had on it.
Yeah, I presented an award ceremony for a charity called the Ashton Organization. And they promote and celebrate sustainable solutions for all of the issues that are facing the climate at the moment. And there are lots, and pollution is one of them. And, you know, statistically, things like there are 100 companies around the world that are creating the most pollution. So there's this big sort of drive, isn't there? We always ask ourselves, what can we do? And we obviously can make changes. And I reduce my single plastic use as much as I can. I have beeswax wrap to cover my food in rather than using cling film. I don't have cling film in my house. I have those, and I have these silicone lids that you can stretch over different sizes of bowls, and then, you know, you can reuse them. We use bamboo toothbrushes. We use toothpaste tablets. So all sorts of things that we do. Plastic is a huge, huge problem, because since the 1950s, since we started producing plastic in the 1950s, it's this amazing, wonderful, tough, durable material. And it is brilliant on so many levels, and it's very useful in the medical world, etc. But it also has this hangover, which is that you can't get rid of it. It doesn't go anywhere, and you can only recycle it a finite number of times. And the statistic that came out a couple of years ago from National Geographic is that since we've been producing plastic in the 1950s worldwide, which I think is the equivalent of 800,000 Eiffel Towers, that's how much plastic we've produced, only 9% of that plastic has ever been recycled. The rest of it has been incinerated, which is obviously bad for particulates and bad for pollution and the atmosphere and global warming. And the rest of it is still here with us on landfill and in the oceans. And I just did a series in Greece last year, and I did a lot of those stories. It's quite hard to get these stories made on television because people don't want them because it's depressing. So you have to try and cushion.
You wrapped it up in nice swimming.
Yeah,
as well,
so I did this lovely travel series to Greece. I was exploring my roots. I carbon offset all my flights, by the way, and I took my mum with me, but I focused on lots, as many as I could, stories that got down to these kinds of things. And I went out with this really great couple of fishermen brothers on the island of Skopelos, and they're fishermen. That's what their families have done for five generations, but there are no fish left anymore. The fish have gone, the fish stocks have depleted. So they've diversified into sustainable tourism, and you go out on their old fishing boat, and about eight people go out there. So it's not massive numbers, and they take you around the islands and show you all their secret coves, and you can jump off the boat and pick up sea urchins, and then they cook for you on the boat, and it's all magical. But they've done it because there are no fish left anymore. And that's the big story. Of that. And the plastic pollution problem, again, I managed to highlight it. There's a really amazing guy who has a foundation there called the Anileia Foundation, which means work with the fishermen. And they now are working with Greek fishermen to reclaim the plastic from the oceans and to recycle and upcycle and just get it out of the sea. And that all came about because this guy Lefteris was on his fishing boat with his fishing family, and they plucked out some, it was a yogurt pot, and he noticed that the date was from the 80s. It was a Coca-Cola. It was a Coca-Cola can. And it was from the 80s, and he noticed that it was from that. Gosh. And then they were talking about it, was saying what a terrible problem the pollution is in the oceans and how it's affecting the fishing and everything. And then the fisherman just threw the can back in the ocean, And he went, what are you doing? And the guy said, well, you know, it will be reclaimed by the sea. And he went, no, you don't get it. That's part of the problem. We need to be getting that stuff out and not doing that. So now this foundation, that this charity that he works with, they are educating fishermen and they pay them to get tons and tons of plastic and rubbish out of the seas, you know, to try and help with this problem of the sea pollution. And that scary stat is that by 1950, if we carry on producing plastic the way that we are and not dealing with it by circulating it in the circular economy, then there will be more plastic in the ocean than fish.
Oh, Annie.
Julia, tell us a little bit about you, your life, where you came from. How did you get into walking? I mean, you talk about living in the city now, which...
Can I just interrupt you there, Annie? So back in the day, let's be honest here, Julia, I know...
Yeah, we have to tell everybody that Louise and I have known each other for a long, long time.
Julia was actually present on my second date with my now husband of 22 years. So it's a long, old time.
I'm going to take the credit.
You can take the credit. So back in the day, and I don't want to be rude, I don't remember you being a walker, but maybe you were. I remember you being a party animal.
I was presenting a series called Exclusive on Channel 5. I'd launched Channel 5 and Lou was on the show.
I was your producer and reporter.
You were a producer and then you started reporting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was never a very good producer.
And we used to party a lot and we had a really good time. But I was, what was I, in my early 20s at that stage. So the walking came before.
It did. I thought it might have done.
My dad is a big outdoor advocate and very knowledgeable. And when I was a little girl, I had the best childhood. I grew up in Rutland, which is this tiny little county bordering Leicestershire. I grew up in a house in a tiny little village. And then at some stage, my mum, who's a real entrepreneur, started a business in Sheffield, a clothing business. So we ended up splitting our time as a family between Rutland and Sheffield for those work reasons. And my dad is a Derbyshire born man and born in Tideswell. And when we were in Sheffield and I was at school in Sheffield, he would take me walking after school and at weekends. And we'd go on these big adventures together across the Peak District. And in fact, I've just written something today. I was writing an article about the time that we used to go and dig snow tunnels in Haversidge in Hope Valley. And we'd then go back and draw maps about it. So he was an amazing dad and really spent as much time with me, engaging with me in the outdoors as he could. And then with my mum, when we were in Rutland, we'd always garden together. We'd potter around the garden and she did, you know, I'd help her with potting stuff and cutting the grass. And so my parents were very different approaches to the outdoors, but a real sort of sensitivity towards it. And by the time I was in my 20s and I was in London and I was working with Lou and we were partying and I was presenting Exclusive and leading a very, very different life, I would always go and have weekends where I would go walking.
That was your secret life. I didn't know about it.
Yeah, it was my dirty secret.
That she goes walking.
I wasn't just doing vodka shots at that bar across the road. And then, of course, as I've got older, it's become, it's sort of in cycles. It's become a much more important part of my life again. And even when I was presenting Watchdog on BBC One, the reason that I wanted to start presenting walking programs is because I was passionate about the walks from my childhood. And I loved the fact that it was so different to what I was doing. I was presenting this consumer show and then I had this conversation with the commissioner at Channel 4 and he'd commissioned these walks by Alfred Wainwright, following in the footsteps of the great Lake District fell walker Alfred Wainwright. And they didn't have a presenter yet. And I said I wanted to do it because women weren't doing outdoorsy stuff then. We're going back quite a long time and it seems a bit strange to say that, but there weren't many women doing outdoorsy programs. And he had assumed that it would be a man who presents this program, probably with a beard wearing an anorak, because that was the profile back then. And that's how I started doing the TV walks, because we were talking about my childhood again. And then they changed my life because Watchdog, I finished with Watchdog, the Wainwright Walk series carried on and it was only ever meant to be a series of four, and then we did another series and then we did another series and then we did another series and then they became the most watched thing on BBC Four and then they moved to BBC Two. And then I ended up presenting Countryfile with Matt Baker, which obviously was huge on Sunday nights, moved it to Sunday nights on BBC One. And it took my career in a very, very different direction, continuing sort of like the travel and the walks and outdoors and passionate things like that. And that's why today I've got my website, The Outdoor Guide, and I'm just firing up my next series of walks, which carry on and on, because it's sort of gone full circle.
And what's utterly brilliant about it is that if you were, you know, let's say I'm a TV executive and somebody comes to me and saying, I want to do a program about walking. I mean, you can imagine most, you know, would think that's not going to make the most amazing television, but it really does. And it's a beautiful gift. You know, you, as we go back to what we said at the beginning, you know, you've given this gift to hundreds of thousands of other people because this is something special. Walking is a special thing, isn't it? And we can all do it.
Walking is a special thing. And I think that we have, all of us have some childhood memory or a sense of place. I mean, you guys must have a place.
Yeah,
that you absolutely connect with and adore. Annie, where did you grow up? What did you do when you were?
Yeah, definitely countryside. Yeah, and my fondest memories are, you know, and that's why I think what you're saying about encouraging children to understand more outside life, how we grow things, where stuff comes from, rings bells with me. You know, I probably don't do enough of it with my children yet. When we were younger, outdoor life was our entertainment. Mm. You know, and I know that's not feasible for everyone because not everyone is lucky enough to live in the countryside or even close to it for that matter, but you know, I think it's a, you know, it's a wonderful education for children.
Well, that's where I come back to the parks and why our parks and those kind of green spaces are so very important for us. My kids' favorite, when I asked them about their favorite day from last year, they say it was a wet October day when it was peeing down with rain. And I said to them, come on, we're going to go outside. And they were like, oh, no. I said, come on, I'm going to zip you all up. And I put them in head-to-toe waterproofs. And I did the same. I said, we're going to go out and we're going to go and stand in the rain. And it was that really like heavy, heavy, sodden. If you'd stood in it in your ordinary clothes, you'd have been soaked through within a minute. And we went outside into the garden and we were soaked within nanoseconds. And then I picked up some leaves and I threw the wet leaves at one of my kids, and I've got 5-year-old twins and an 8-year-old little boy. And then we had this massive wet leaf fight and then we rolled down the hill together, and then we did it again. And the neighbor came out and said, oh my God, I need to take a picture of you guys. And we did a picture where we all jumped up off this hill at the same time. And she took the picture at the most incredible moment. And it's one of my favorite family photos because we're up in the air and we're all smiling and we're all just like soaked. And they loved that and they remember it.
Wow.
And that is a keystone moment for them. You know, that will, there'll be something in the back of their mind forever about that. And it was the elements, it was dealing with the elements, it was enjoying and embracing the elements. And that is what the outdoors is about.
Julia, I've watched so much of your stuff on Twitter and over lockdown. And one of the things that's really striking is that you have been really honest that it's not been a bed of roses. There have been bad days, haven't there? And, you know, my heart went out to you when you said that, because it takes quite something to sort of admit that publicly as well.
Yeah, I feel quite strongly that social media is, we know that it can be very, very toxic. Mm. And there are a lot of bad things about social media. And I think it's very easy to compare yourself and to look at these perfect worlds that everybody lives in. And remember that every post and every picture that people put up is what they want you to see. So it's the best of themselves in the best of those environments. And of course, you know, that's sort of within our human, I think that's part of our human nature, that you want to put that image out there, don't you? It's also important that people don't think that we all lead a happy 100% positive lives all of the time, because there is nobody on the planet that is happy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, 300 odd days of the year. That doesn't exist. We're all human. We all have issues. We'll all lose somebody in our lives, you know, that's life. We're going to face a death, whether it's our parents or it's our pet, or if it's something more tragic, it's one of our children. So that's inevitable. We'll all lose a job, or we won't get a job that we want, or we'll miss out on an opportunity that we really, really wanted. We'll all get turned down for something disappointment and dealing with disappointment is just a part of life, and you have to be able to deal with those knocks. And with social media, I think we also have a duty, if you're somewhat in the public eye, and I don't have a massive social media following, it's like 90,000 or something on Twitter. It's not huge. I'm not a Kardashian, and I don't, you know, I'm not trying to espouse some lifestyle through it and sell you lots of products and everything because of it. But it's nevertheless, I have a lot of engagement with my followers, and they do listen to what I say, and we have conversations and discussions about things, and that's important to me. And I felt during lockdown, as I've been doing these sessions with Jonathan Hoban as well, and we've been talking about mental health, I just had a day where it was in the midst of lockdown. I was doing some ironing. I couldn't work the iron. I didn't know why I couldn't work the iron. And then I started saying to myself, why can't I just work a simple iron? Why is it not doing what I want it to do? And it flicked a switch in me, and it got to me, and I started crying. And it was because actually I gave myself a lot to do, and I have given myself a lot to do through lockdown. How I've managed it from a mental health point of view is I've kept myself busy. I've done these lockdown sessions. I'm busy with work. I did the thing for Ashton, which I'm not doing for any money. I'm doing it to stay busy and to put positive things out there. And because it's important to me, I'm a working person, and that has always been a part of my life. So I needed to keep that structure going for myself. Otherwise, I would have lost it completely, I think, and unraveled. And that day, I just did lose it. And I thought, maybe I'm doing too much. I can't do it. And I need to do this for tomorrow, and I need to do that for the kids. And I spent 3-4 hours crying, and I put 3 minutes of it up on which is probably what you saw.
I just wanted to give you a big hug, Julia.
I just put it up to say, look, it's fine. We all get these days. You know, here I am talking about positivity, and I've got a podcast about positivity, and I talk about walking and how green spaces can help you and blah, blah. But actually, look, I'm having a really shit day, and it's got to me, and that is absolutely fine. And if you're having that kind of moment, or you've had lots of them, then please don't feel bad, and don't think that this is the end. And also let it out. Let your emotions, you know, do breathe it out and purge yourself. Otherwise, that internalization as well is incredibly dangerous.
It's wonderful to hear you speak like that. I mean, it's horrible that you had a hard time. I'll give you a little bit of advice. Just don't get the iron out again.
Yes. If that goes to show, doesn't it? Ironing is one of my least favorite domestic chores. And I think we've reached that thing. I'm definitely not going to be doing the ironing again. I'll stick to the laundry, putting it in, and taking it out, and loading and unloading the dishwasher.
I'm 100% with you. Go on, Annie.
I don't iron. I mean, people will wonder, you know, they'll probably say, well, that's why your children look so scruffy, and that's why you always wear the same thing, because it's a thing that doesn't need ironing. I don't have to iron my husband's shirts because he doesn't like the way I iron them, so that's great.
That's good. Good, keep on. Well done. That was a good move in the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. Do a crap job, and then you won't have to iron your husband's shirts for you. Not saying I could do a very good job anyway, but so don't get the iron out anymore. But it's interesting because I was, you know, when you were chatting earlier, there's so much positivity in you, which is absolutely wonderful, and I would imagine that probably 90%+ of the time you are like that. So in terms of your advice to people, you know, and particularly in this really difficult time, you're a mum as well, and wow, you know, you've got three really young children, twins as well. I know how brilliant twins are. I am a twin. I'm a twinny.
There are two of you beauties out there in the world. How lucky.
Honestly, Julia, she sent me a picture of her and her sister Charlotte when they were about 7 or something. She says, which is me? No idea. I guessed wrong, didn't I?
There's two of me. But I do know that twins, oh my God, there's two twins shouting at you. You know, they're 5. They're going to be having tantrums. And, you know, and that's really, really tough. But I guess your advice to someone out there, a mummy out there doing what you're doing right now, trying to be great at everything, trying to be a great mum, trying to hold down a career and earn money, it's not easy.
No, it's not easy. And I think the advice is everything that we've talked about over the past sort of 40 minutes is look after yourself, take the time out that you need. Don't forget nature and green spaces, and get to your park if you don't live in the countryside. And it might seem very simplistic that it is doing you the world of good, but it is. It genuinely is on so many levels, from a psychological point of view and a physical point of view. As I said, those magic microbes that you're inhaling. And if you're feeling any guilt about that, remember, if you're not looking after yourself, you can't look after anybody else. And you also can't you just can't operate efficiently and effectively and happily. And I spoke to somebody this week on my podcast, A Little Bit of Positive, called Anita Kaushal, and she's very much, she's Indian, so she reverts to Ayurveda, which is the science of well-being a lot. And she said something that resonated with me, which is, we are meant to be here for a well and happy life. And you have to do your best to create a well and happy life. And it doesn't mean that it will be that 100% of the time, you know, that you'll reach that wellness and happiness 100% of the time. But that's what we're here to do. So try and look after yourself.
I've got a question for you. We've looked at quite a bit of the statistics. We've mentioned this one before on the podcast, and it was about, but there's lots of things about equality and how it's been affected during lockdown. And there's one stat which we've been talking about on Her Spirit, which is exercise down by 7% in women when it's up by 6% in men. And, you know, yeah, I can see you've talked about this, haven't
yes.
you?
Yes. So that is, I think that's an interesting statistic, because there was, I tweeted something about a stat yesterday as well, that I think it was 53% of women felt unhappier during lockdown. It was worrying them more than men as well. So I think there are certain things. It's, first of all, women are more inclined, and society does lead us to be the carer more in the household, doesn't it? I mean, that's we are. It tends to be the domestic chores and looking after the children still tends that those things weigh more towards women than they do towards men, if we're talking about heterosexual couples, of course. I still think that we've still got it wrong, haven't we, in society? I mean, if you just look at boardrooms across the world, a tiny percentage of boardrooms are women. Look at women in government all around the world. Again, it's a tiny percentage. I think you've got sort of 10 or 20 women in amongst hundreds of men. We're not represented fairly in government, in the UK even. So we've still got a long, long way to go. I think us have been lucky to be born in this country, in the UK. And I think hopefully our children, my children, because gosh, Mia's 19 now, but my girls who are 5, I think by the time they're of working age.
She's really giving me the look here, everybody. You can't see.
I can't believe that Mia's 19. My girls, I hope that this is the time when they will really be living in the time of equality in this country and parity in this country, at a time where they are measured equally. But right now, we are still not there. I mean, women still don't get paid as much as men. Certainly not, you know, around the world. That's a shocking statistic. And it's interesting a lot of the work that I do around climate change and the discussions I have about that. In the top 5 of things to do to help the climate crisis, in the middle of that is empowering women in sub-Saharan Africa. And you sort of think about that for a moment. You go, what on earth has that got to do with climate change? But of course, population does have an impact. People always talk about how are we going to feed all these mouths in the future to come. And in sub-Saharan Africa, the average number of children is 11 or 12. And that's not because those women want to have 11 or 12 children. In a lot of instances, it's because culturally they are pulled out of education faster because it's regarded more important to educate the men, the boys, than the younger girls. And a lot of girls are married off as child brides. So under the age of 15, that's a scary statistic, how many young girls are married off and start having children at a dangerous time in their life where it could actually kill them as well. So what the empowerment of women is to empower them and educate them so that they're not forced or coerced through cultural reasons into those situations, and that they have the opportunity to have a career and not just to be a baby making machine or a wife for a husband.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that's, you know, what's going on there. And also here, you know, there are concerns, aren't there, that what has happened during lockdown takes, you know, equality back by decades, which is, you know, really, if that is to be the case, really depressing, actually.
Yeah, it is. It's very depressing. I mean, it's a bit like the sort of the plastic pollution statistics as well. Plastic, single-use plastic use has gone up during lockdown because people have this belief that that plastic is safer in some way when you're going to the shops, and that hasn't been shown to be the case at all. So you might as well still have your fabric bags and wash them properly. People are dumping their masks and their gloves on the floor. You've seen it. That's horrible as well. So these are, I hope these are blips, and that we do get back to where we were pre-lockdown with these issues being taken seriously. And I think what we can do to counter the argument with women during lockdown and what's happening, and that they're taking on more of the domestic sort of roles, is that I do think that workplaces now will be more understanding about working from home. This we have proven now. With it, here we are doing it today. We're doing a podcast. You're at home. I'm at home. Annie's at home. Melanie, the producer's at somewhere else. Doesn't is that home, Melanie?
She's at home.
She's at home.
Home.
Yeah, you're at home. So we can now work from home, and I hope that companies and businesses now will allow more of that and realize that we can be effective, and people don't have to spend 2 hours commuting every day, and that perhaps we can break up the working week in a different way. And also, as we said earlier about the kids jumping around in the background of the video, that's okay as well. Yeah, we're allowed to have children, we're allowed to have family. So maybe that means that women can restructure things at work in a way now after lockdown that is more palatable for their companies.
One of the things you mentioned, jumping around in the background, Julia, you honestly, your mum dancing videos, Annie, I know you've not seen them. She thought I was talking about your mum dancing, Julia. No, these are Julia jumping around on, is it on your bed?
It's on my bed. It's on my bed. So I call them my bad mum dancing, because it is bad mum dancing. I've always liked to dance, as you know, Lou.
Yeah,
I'm going back many, many years. But it becomes sort of over a certain age. I don't know why you're sort of not allowed to dance anymore, but apparently you're not. But anyway, I still do. And I do kitchen discos regularly with the kids. And I just decided that I was going to do my bad mum dancing videos. So I dress up. I put on lovely frocks that I might have used for a photo shoot. That people have lent me or I've worn for something else. And then I put on whatever, sometimes I take requests, whatever music, it could be disco, it could be Dirty House music, it could be like a good old Dolly Parton classic. And then I just dance and bounce on the bed for a good 3 minutes. I'm only allowed, because of copyright, you can only put about 20 seconds out there, probably for good reason, on social media. And people, I'm getting complaints now. They're like, but I put some yoga pose up yesterday and some guy went, yes, but where's the dancing? It's like, we need more of the bad mum dancing. So I will be doing that this week, more bad mum dancing coming up.
You know, you said, Julia, that, you know, you haven't got any beauty products coming out like the Kardashians a little way back there, saying that you've only got like just under 100,000 Twitter followers or something. You know, there's got to be some product out there. Don't you think, Lou? She's missing a trick here, Julia.
I look at Julia when she's doing the walks and I was like, where's she got this from, that from? Actually, you do say, because otherwise it'd be so annoying. You get so many questions, wouldn't you? Where's her green jacket from?
Yeah, I'm all right with the outdoor stuff. When I get sent lots of outdoor stuff, and I do have some deals and endorsements with various outdoor clothing brands and all of that sort of thing, which I always declare, obviously. But I suppose what I'm saying about that Kardashian thing, you see Eva Longoria, and she's got some Instagram posts. She's going, oh, thank you, Gucci, for sending me this handbag. Gucci never send me a handbag. I might get some rucksack that you can climb Mount Everest with no zips or something, or you know, it'll be some of the stuff I get is hilarious. And I phone up my sister Gina and I'm like, you'll never guess what I got sent this week. Sheepy.
Oh yes. A sheepy, which I was going to be given a sheepy for when I went to do the sport relief challenge. I was meant to be going to Mongolia, and obviously going to the loo was going to be quite difficult. So a sheepy actually is quite a useful item, isn't it, Julia? You can explain what it is.
It is. A sheepy, for people who don't know what a sheepy is, it's basically a little tiny device so that women can pee standing up. So it's like a little plastic triangle that you put over your foo-foo and then you wee into it. And all I would say to you is you'll need a bit of practice to make the sheepy work for you flawlessly. You can now also, it's called bog in a bag, and it's for camping, and it's for the other purging that we do. That way. And so, yes. You can do that, which is better than I've wrote an article last week for one of the papers about littering. You know, the horrible scenes in Bournemouth. I mean, I'm an ambassador for Keep Britain Tidy, so litter is one of my other bugbears. And the most depressing bit of that story, and I don't know if you covered it, Lou, on Breakfast, was the human poo in a burger box left for people to pick up. I mean, what is going on in people's minds? That's not very... that's not very her spirit, is it? Poo in a burger box. But Jenny Eclair was very funny. The comedian and author Jenny Eclair, who I've known probably for as long as you. She said that a poo in a burger box just about sums up 2020, doesn't it?
Do you know what, Julia? For the first time I've seen Annie look actually genuinely horrified.
She's thinking, is this going to make it onto the podcast?
Yes.
Will they cut that bit out?
I'm fine with that. You know, I mean, I'm a runner, right? So, you know, I'm not, these kind of things don't make me cringe or anything like that. But I'm just like, you know, the pee thing for the girl. What, can't you just pee somewhere? Do you need what?
No, but it's maybe.
What am I missing out here? Am I missing out something?
With walking as well, it's the same. You just go behind a bush, don't you?
Yeah.
It's for when there's no bush.
Yes, when there's no bush and you need to pee like a man standing up, what do you do? And that is...
I mean, to be honest with you, wouldn't you be better crouching down? Because as a woman standing up going for a pee, you look a bit silly anyway, wouldn't you?
Anyway, on that note, should we leave this podcast?
There's no way to do it crouching down without flashing your bum unless you're wearing a skirt.
Listen, now we're really going there. Who has ever managed to, let's say, be going for a wee and be stung by nettles in the nether regions?
Oh, loads of times.
Oh my gosh, that is one of my most horrific things. Julia, I love the way you go, oh yeah, loads of times, no problem.
Yeah, that's happened a lot. Because, well, we could go down a route that we probably don't want to go
stop.
Down. But I needed to do something very, very urgently in the bush in South Africa once. I was filming a walking safari. And we were tracking lions and I just needed to go and a sheepie wouldn't have done it. So imagine how I felt. We were on the trail of lions in a riverbed and I had to go and do a number two. And I was petrified that, I mean, it was snakes, ticks, lions, you name it. I have never been so uncomfortable. I was like looking all around me going, oh my God, and what would I do? I wouldn't be able to run. I'd just fall in my face and then they'd get me and they'd bite my bottom. It'd be really sore.
God, I think biting your bum would be the least of your worries with a load of lions around you.
It's like that thing you don't want to be. It's like if a shark came up from underneath and grabbed your legs. It's like, oh, it's like that thing you just don't want to happen. I'd like to see it happening. I don't want it to happen from behind or underneath.
Do you know what? Whilst I do think, you know, I don't think it's fair to say it doesn't matter what people think. The one thing I do tell my kiddies, like if they're desperate for a pee and we're out in the countryside and Zoe's 11 now, she's getting a bit more sort of precious. She used to go for a pee anyway. She goes, oh, but what if someone sees me? My thing is, are you ever going to see that person again? Probably not. So, you know, in a world that we're growing up in now, where everyone's so worried about what everyone thinks, what about if we just don't care what people think?
Well, you see, the slight problem with that now, Annie, is that we all now have these little supercomputers in our pocket and they might not see you again, but they might take a picture of you and they might pop it up on the internet. And that's the thing these days. You can't do anything really, I mean, anywhere without the possibility, and quite a strong possibility, of somebody taking a picture of you doing it.
Well, it would probably only add to your, you know, your followers anyway, wouldn't it? Because it's always a positive in everything.
There's always, and that's what we want to do. We want to be encouraging our 11-year-olds to get as more followers as possible, to get as many followers as possible.
And finally, Julia, we've got to end this podcast. Look, who's arrived?
Who?
David's putting in a...
He loves David Brad. Lynch! Oh!
Brad. Hello, Poppet.
Look at his hair. I know you can't see this at home, everybody.
Good to see you.
Too long.
Look at that long hair. He's still got a good head of hair. He always had a good head of hair.
He can't hear you, which is probably a good thing.
There she is there.
Anyway, I'm going to say goodbye, everybody. It's been, Julia, I knew this podcast would be wild. I never thought we'd get to the last sort of 5 minutes, but it's been brilliant. Honestly, it's been such a pleasure to see you. Here he is after 22 years.
It is so lovely to see you and to talk to you.
Still married.
And I'm looking forward to some sort of adventure with you soon, Louise and Annie. I'm not going to do the Three Peaks with you.
You really not? Why not?
No, but I'll do something with you. We'll do something together. I'd love to.
Okay, well, let's do that.
Drink wine.
Yes,
drink
Annie, wine. I want to drink wine with you. Lots of it.
Yeah. Julia, you're a star. Thank you so much.
Love you guys.
Bye.
Bye, Jules. Bye, Annie.
Bye.
Annie, I knew that Julia is wild in lots of different ways. I knew that podcast would go off-piste, but I never would have predicted that's where we would end up. But, you know, Brilliant. We need to talk about these things.
Oh, we need to talk about everything. And that's hopefully what we do on the Her Spirit podcast. We just make people feel like they're normal, right? Even when we get down to the real nitty gritty of it. But you've known Julia. That was my first meeting. What a great girl. Just like so much energy, but like really honest, you know, about the good and the bad, which is just.
Yeah, and also really honest about the fact that she thinks we're absolutely mad to be doing the Three Peaks in 24 hours. We'll be okay.
We'll be absolutely fine. You know, I am the eternal optimist. Sometimes that goes in my favour, sometimes against. But it's slightly worrying with someone as much walking experience as Julia has that she thinks we're slightly mad.
And to go back to my point at the beginning, I said walking is hard because I've been doing some walking and then I've been doing some running. And I genuinely, obviously, have discovered now I have running muscles but not necessarily walking muscles. So what should we do? Should we like run walk it, or do you think we just need to walk, Annie?
I think my sensible head tells me we plan to walk it and we train to walk it, because I think they're quite different with quite different muscles, because we could end up
they are, aren't they?
We could end up just you know, ending up on the floor in a big pile of, like, you know, whatever
of cryingness,
yes,
of blubbing.
You know what is so wonderful is all the people that are tuning in and listening to our podcast. We hit over 40,000 this week. I think we're heading towards 45, which is amazing. We've had
thank you
everyone. We've had some lovely messages and reviews, and a shout out this week goes to SL Leeming, who says, I listen to podcasts when out running. They're upbeat, fun, informative and friendly, and they make the runs go quicker. That's good news. Great listening, especially in times of isolation when we're missing normal friendly catch-ups. Thanks, ladies. Keep that up. Well, thank you so much. You don't give your first name, but thank you very much indeed.
Don't forget, you can subscribe. You can look back at some of the podcasts if you haven't listened to them. And we really have enjoyed them as well. So just keep us company. If you've got any ideas of anybody you'd like to speak to as well, do let us know, and we shall speak to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Hi, my name's Mel Burry and I'm the co-founder of Her Spirit. Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast, and we hope you found it useful. I'd just like to say thanks to our sponsors, Medichex, who without their support, this wouldn't have been possible. Medichex offers simple to use blood tests. Wanting to strengthen your immunity or check for underlying conditions, they offer a home test with doctor's reviewed results. Just go to medichex.com to find out more. And remember, together we've got this. Have a great day.